Welcome to session 8 of the Yoga Sutra Book Study Club, Samadhi, Reaching the Final Summit. Last session, we spent a good amount of time exploring the idea of samapatti, spiritual absorption. And we looked at this idea of absorption in context to the process of meditation and samadhi, which is this experience, this peak experience of our inner journey. And one of the key things that we talked about was how the mind has a unique capacity to be like a crystal, to allow whatever is right next to it to reflect in it perfectly. The mind has a unique capacity to be like a mirror, and that whatever object is in focus, right next to it, the mind takes that form on, which is why selecting an appropriate object of our meditation is so important. And in exploring samapatti, we really explored four different unique categories of objects which lead to four different experiences of that state of absorption, samapatti, and how they grow increasingly subtle. We begin from a more external experience and move inward. And in that context, we looked at these four categories of objects, or four categories of absorption, that very much relate to the stages of samadhi that we explored much earlier on in Sutras 117 and 118. So we'll come back to that idea again today as we look at the final sutras of this first book of Yoga Sutra, Samadhipada, which are all about samadhi. And we'll link them back to Sutras 117 and 118. These objects that we're talking about are that focal point of awareness that allow the mind to have stability. And depending on the nature of the object, we have a particular kind of experience, a particular kind of process of meditation. We looked at gross objects, vitarka. Gross object means something that's quote-unquote real, it's tangible. We can see, smell, taste, touch, or hear it. And allowing that kind of object to be the focal point of our awareness is the first stage of our absorption. Vitarka. That takes us exactly back to Sutra 117, where we saw there is a state of samadhi, where there's an experience of oneness when our mind is anchored in an external object. Then we explored how we can just come to the essence of that external object, where we're aware of the meaning of that, but not the way that it looks, smells, feels, sounds, or smells. Meaning, we're only aware of the essence, the meaning, and not the external form. But that meaning is still meaning that arises from something which is an external object. After that, we looked at subtle objects. Those first two categories were vitarka, savitarka, with form, and nirvitarka, without form, but still the essence of something which is an external object. Both of those together are the first the experience that we have in the first stage of samadhi. This idea of subtle objects, which is the second stage of samadhi, and the second half of the idea of mental absorption that we explored last session, requires us to go a little bit deeper. Here we're looking at objects that aren't rooted in the external world, but are something from our inner world. And this is a little bit more subtle, but it gets at the idea that there's a subtle counterpart to everything that we experience in the manifest world. And that when we begin to have those kind of objects that arise from within as the focal point of our awareness, there's a more subtle experience that we gain. So we're going towards increasing subtlety. That was vichara. And an even deeper stage of this is when we're no longer looking at the form of the subtle object. And again, the form here is a little bit unique, because with an external object, the form is something that gives it tangibility. Here we're talking about something which is already quite a bit more subtle. So it doesn't, we're not going to necessarily talk about form in the way that we do in the external world, but yet we're still talking about something which is a discrete, subtle object from within. But just like with the external objects, there's also an essential form of this. What's the meaning of that? That was this idea of nirvichara samapatti, absorption in the feeling or the essence that is at the heart of a subtle object arising from within. And the best way to really look at this is what we explored in Sutra 136, the idea of lotus of the heart being a subtle object, subtle space within ourself. It's something which is as real as an external object, but not defined in the same way, because it's an experience arising within ourself. But as we went deeper into that, we looked at there was an essence behind that subtle object. That essence was this experience of Vishoka, complete state of freedom from sorrow and pain, and Jyotishmati, this inner illumination. That is the essential nature of this unique space, this unique subtle object arising from within that is termed as the lotus of the heart. This experience of the essence of a subtle object is exactly what nirvichara samapatti is all about, and what is this second stage of samadhi that we looked at in 117, the idea of vichara samadhi, vichara samadhi. As you will recall, there were four stages of samadhi that are part of lower samadhi, which is what we're still talking about. Lower meaning samadhi where we're still anchored in a focal awareness around an object. It's simply that that object grows more and more subtle. So we begin with something which is an actual external object, then we move to something which is a subtle object arising from within. The second two stages of samadhi, or sorry, the last two stages, are samadhi that's anchored in a state of pure joy, and samadhi anchored in a state of pure awareness. Ananda Anugata Samadhi and Asmita Anugata Samadhi. The amazing thing about both of these is that they're very much correlated to what we studied in Sutra 136 about the lotus of the heart, granting us Vishoka and Jyotishmati, a state that's free from pain and a state of inner illumination. So keep that in mind as we continue exploring the rest of these verses on samadhi from Sutra 145 onward. The important thing to really remember is that samapatti, the state of absorption, is a process of meditation where we are being absorbed into the object of our meditation, which is initially a little bit more external and then becomes much, much more internal and more subtle. That's the simple point with samapatti. Then we bring that to the study of samadhi. Samadhi is the state of experience that we have at different stages of this mental absorption. The state of experience is, the qualities of that state of experience are directly related to the quality of the object, which is why we studied absorption, samapatti, in such detail up to Sutra 144. Now we're talking about the state of experience from Sutras 145 to 151, which are linked back to 117 and 118. And here we're really looking at that amazing culmination of lower samadhi. Lower samadhi being in samadhi where there's still an objective awareness, but one which is highly subtle, very, very refined. We're no longer finding a state of oneness with an external object, but something much more essential that comes from within. And there's a lot of subtlety here, to the point where it almost might feel like, are we splitting hairs? Is this really important? The reason why it's important is that it helps us to see that there's tremendous richness in our inner world. Samadhi is not an on or off state. It's a continuum of experience. And just like anything else where we're really working to cultivate a unique human capacity, and we see that it's a whole lifetime of effort. You know, even when someone is very, very good at something, whether it's art, music, any skill, it continually refines and grows. Anytime you hear someone say, well, I'm perfect at it, and I think I'm the best in the world, there's nothing left to do, usually it's the beginning of the decline. Because there's always something more to experience and refine in any human endeavor. That's what's really being reflected here, that keep exploring and searching for more and more subtlety in our experience of samadhi. And if we do so, we will reach that pinnacle of human achievement. It's more important to have landmarks along the way than to worry about what that destination is like. The more worried we are about, are we there yet, the less likely we are to actually reach. So all of this discussion from 145 onwards, which seems very subtle, a little bit technical, is about helping us to build a relationship with the subtlety of our inner world and the subtlety of the experience of samadhi. All of this really is an expression of how deep is our practice going? What are we really feeling? We want to move beyond an awareness within, which we feel is anchored in something external to us. We want it to feel like it's really helping us to go within and find our essence. That's exactly where we ended on 144. That nirvichara samapatti, absorption in the essence of a subtle object arising from within, is a very high state of our inner absorption. That's the gateway to experiencing the deeper states of samadhi. Sutra 145 picks up from there. It says, that which ultimately dissolves into irreferable prakriti is the subtlest of all objects. So what does this mean? This takes us into a much deeper study of the metaphysics of yoga, which is called Sankhya philosophy. But it's sharing a very simple yet essential truth, that the essence of our mind is the finest aspect of creation. And here, the word mind might be a limiting factor. There's not, it's not the perfect English translation to what's being expressed here. This subtlest of all objects is buddhi. Buddhi being the essence of our mind, that faculty for inner discernment, pure perception. It's that very first creation that emerges out of primordial nature, the subtlest aspect of nature itself. It's the connection point to our source. So buddhi is a word that we might have heard before that's used in many different ways in yoga. And it's important to remember that buddhi is not just another yogic concept or yogic word. It really is a very powerful word that's meant to express our very essence. In many regards, in the West, the way that we use the word soul to mean the essence of our being, that thing which is immortal, that aspect of ourself which is a spark of divinity, which brings us to life, which is our deepest identity, that is what buddhi is trying to express. It's more than the functional part of our mind, far, far more. That, and the sutra here tells us that that is what ultimately dissolves into irreferable prakriti, meaning the very source of the source. The goal of yoga is to help us experience our inner essence. Right, from Sutra 1.3, Tada drashtuhu sorupe avasthanam, that upon achieving the goal of yoga, which is mastery over the mind, we experience our swarupa, our essential self-nature. That's what buddhi is all about. It's the conduit to experience our essential self-nature, our prakriti, which literally means our nature, who we are. That's what this is referring to. That experience of buddhi is that gateway from lower samadhi, which is an awareness where there's still a focal point of our awareness, an object, even if it's very, very subtle. We transcend that objective awareness into something much more when we experience our buddhi. Another thing which is very important to keep in mind here is something which is expressed in the commentary on page 234, that this essence, this buddhi, the essence of the buddhi is Jyotishmati and Vishoka. Exactly taking us back to 136 again, that the essence of this purest part of our mind is pure luminosity and a state which is completely free from all pain and suffering. That is the very essence of buddhi. The experience of buddhi is an experience of pure luminosity and complete freedom from pain and suffering. The buddhi is not a thing. Buddhi is a state of realization, an experience. Just like we have a name and we have all these identities, I am this, I am this, I am this, and yet we know that I'm more than that. Our soul is more than all of our achievements. In the same way, our buddhi is far more than any identity. It's a state of realization, state of experience. And the best way to characterize that state of experience is pure luminosity and complete freedom, freedom from all pain and suffering. Sutra 146. Those are indeed samadhi with seed. Very cryptic sutra. What the heck are we talking about? This is helping us look at the four stages of lower samadhi in relation to our journey of life. We talked about the four stages of lower samadhi being called lower samadhi because they're still accompanied by objective awareness. There's an object of our concentration, and that when we're absorbed in that object, we have a certain experience, a certain state of samadhi. It might be more external, which is the beginning of samadhi, absorption in a physical, tangible object, then the essence of that tangible object, then absorption in a subtle object, and ultimately absorption in the essence of a subtle object, which it's extremely subtle. It's absorption in the experience of pure luminosity and pure joy is that higher state of lower samadhi, if you will, meaning the most subtle form of samadhi where there's still an objective awareness. In all of these, all four of these different types of awareness, types of samadhi, there's still a seed. What is that seed? The seed of our karmic identity. We're still aware of ourselves as an individual being. We have an identity. That identity is what yoga calls our karma. All of those things which we, which help us give specificity to who we are. In the beginning, they're very external. We might identify ourselves with our possessions, with what literally what we experience in the world. Over time, we identify ourselves with certain experiences within. The highest stage of this identity is an identity of pure joy or pure awareness. Interestingly enough, that might seem like, oh, I've already done it and there's nothing left in me. What yoga is saying is that we're still defining that pure joy and pure awareness in an objective manner. There's still some part of our karmic identity left, even if it's very, very subtle. That's the seed that we're talking about here. And that's where Yoga Sutra introduces a new idea of sabija samadhi. In 117, we looked at the word sampragyata samadhi. Samadhi, which is brought to us by an experience of being focused on various objects. Here is sabija samadhi, samadhi where there is still a seed of awareness, a karmic identity. So it's just looking at it from a different vantage point. It's the same exact idea as sampragyata samadhi from Sutra 117, but looking at it from the perspective of our human identity, that we are a meditator. We are seeking to find a deeper understanding of ourself, and that's a process. As we keep going deeper and deeper, our identity is refined and refined. It grows more and more subtle. Just like in Sampragyata Samadhi, we're looking at the object of our meditation. That grows more and more subtle. As the object of our meditation grows more subtle, our identity grows more subtle. The seed becomes more and more essential. But we're brought to the same point, that the culmination of Sabija Samadhi or Sampragyata Samadhi leads us to a highly refined identity where we're experiencing ourselves as pure joy and pure awareness, and where the object of that experience is that pure joy and pure awareness, which is still the key distinction here, is that we still see that as something that we're experiencing rather than the experience itself. There is still potentially a distinction between ourself as the meditator, the process of meditation, and the object of meditation. These three streams are almost completely one, and yet we are still aware that there is potentially a distinction. I am still the meditator in Sabija Samadhi and Sampragyata Samadhi. Again, it might seem like we're splitting hairs, but the whole point here is that we're seeing, is there something beyond this? And how to reach there. The goal is to keep refining our essence. That essence is buddhi. And it's interesting, there's a word here used that is called buddhi sattva, which comes up in many places in these sutras. The discerning light of buddhi, or the essential wisdom of buddhi. That's what we're trying to experience or cultivate an experience of in these increasingly refined states of meditation. As the object of our meditation grows more and more subtle, our ability to awaken our buddhi sattva, the essence of our buddhi, grows. We need to find an object of our awareness which is almost as subtle as buddhi itself. Ultimately, the subtlest of all objects is buddhi, so everything will dissolve into that, but we need something to help us reach there. That's how the journey of meditation is designed. Sutra 147. Spiritual transparency and joy come from continued purification of nirvichara samapatti. This reminds us that the way to reach the higher states of samadhi is through continued practice. As we continue purifying our inner awareness, we evolve, we grow, our identity is transformed. And it's worth going back to a discussion on nirvichara samapatti. It's absorption in the essence of a subtle object arising from within. This is important because subtle object already is one which is much closer to our essential nature. It's not something which the world has defined for us, but something which is an essential part of our being. I'll give, again, the example of lotus of the heart. It's not literally a lotus. It's not located in our physical heart. It's a unique experience, a unique space, what Yoga Sutra calls a subtle object. Because we can't put our finger on it, it's hard for us to call it real. But yoga's inspiring us to see that reality is more than whatever we can see, smell, taste, touch, or hear. We need to cultivate an inner sense That's all the work that we talked about through pranic awareness and all the different means that yoga provides us through the eight limbs. Once we find that inner subtle object, that inner experience, we look for the essence of it. And we do our best to be absorbed in its essence. As we do that, our experience of ourself grows more and more subtle and refined. And that's exactly what it's saying here, that spiritual transparency and joy come from the continued purification of nirvichara samapatti. As that absorption grows more and more pure, more and more essential, more and more reflective of the essence of that inner object, in the case of lotus of the heart, the essence of that is pure joy and pure illumination. As we reach there, that is what we become. Our identity starts to become more and more essential. There's more and more resonance. You can see that there's a very close relationship between these sutras and 136 in the way that I'm sharing them. That's the unique quality of this commentary, and also a unique expression of trying to understand the Yoga Sutra from a practitioner's perspective. Scholarly approach is one where we really try to intellectualize this idea of samadhi. Here, we're trying to see how we can experience it. That's why it's useful to keep coming back to 136 and all the sutras which precede it, which give us a blueprint about how to begin walking on that path. What kind of practices lead us to experience a subtle object from within? And we all have that within our reach. It's not samadhi because it's impossible. It's samadhi because it is possible, even though we often use samadhi to be something which is really, really far away. But leave it for next week, next month, next year, next lifetime. No, it is here when we do our practice and when we try to bring the full force of our self-effort to bear upon this goal and allow whatever is in our, whatever is meant for us to reach us. There's a number of really beautiful passages in the commentary on 147 here. Through continuous practice, this joy intensifies, the joy that comes from nirvichara samapatti, making the mind sharper and more intuitive. So inner clarity dawns. The mind is so well illumined by the unalloyed light of pure consciousness that we see the world of sensory experience as it is. This is very intriguing. We see the world of sensory experience as it is. Even though it's a deep state of inner experience, we can see the world outside for what it is. We see that the world isn't good or bad. The world isn't bondage, and it's also not our freedom. It's an opportunity for experience and an opportunity to be fulfilled. We see it for what it is. From the perspective of our intuitive wisdom that arises from within, we realize life has a purpose and we must find this purpose now. Contentment is one of the signs that we're progressing on the path of nirvichara samapatti, absorption in the essence of a subtle object. The hunger that all of us have to experience that we're trying to fulfill by being very engaged in the world starts to be fulfilled from the inside. It doesn't mean that we no longer are active in the world. We know what to ask from the world. We're engaged purposefully, not because we're trying to quench an insatiable thirst for experience, but because we know what's ours to do. So we're content from the inside, and we're engaged purposefully in the world. Sutra 148. There, that self-luminous field of consciousness is laden with truth. Very short, but very important sutra. it introduces a unique word called prajna. P-R-J-N-A, prajna. And I'll read to you from page 241, because it's encapsulated in a very beautiful way. Truth is the core of prajna. Truth and truth alone radiates from the infinite field of intuition. The discerning power of prajna has no parallel. In the light of intuitive wisdom, we see things as they are. Prajna is a big word, usually translated as intuitive wisdom or inner discernment. It's very much related to the word buddhi. Just like we said that buddhi sattva is the power of illumination of buddhi, or the discerning wisdom of buddhi. Prajna really is just that as well. Whatever, if we say that buddhi is like the sun, the brilliance of the sun is buddhi sattva or prajna. It's that extraordinary transformational potential that radiates from buddhi, from the core of our being. And in that regard, it's like buddhi is that link, that lens, which allows the pure brilliance of consciousness itself to radiate into our life. Buddhi is that gateway, that connection point that allows the brilliance of our core being to radiate into the totality of our life. We experience that radiance as prajna. And we have to get close enough before we can have that experience. Imagine this, right now we're 93 million miles away from the sun. We experience light in a very diffused manner, which allows us to live in this world, to see ourselves and to see the world. And there's a natural ebb and flow of light and darkness. It's essential brilliance, but it's very, very well digested. We're able to really experience it in a broad way. If we were to get right up close to the sun, that brilliance would be so overwhelming because it's so concentrated. We're very close to the source. The brilliance of prajna that radiates from the buddhi reaches every part of our life. It's not that, at the current stage, we're completely cut off from our intuitive wisdom. It's there, but it's there in a very diffused form. It's very diffused because all of our identities, our samskaras, veil it. Our identity of I am this and this and this and this is far more real to us than this extraordinary brilliance of our inner wisdom, our discerning wisdom, our intuitive awareness of prajna. So it's there, but in a very, very diffused way. And there's some doubt, even when we have intuitive flashes. First we're amazed, and then we wonder, did I just imagine that? Is that really real? How am I sure? Let me go double check with someone. So then we have to go through all the steps of a linear process of cognition, awareness. But it's very important to keep in mind that prajna is not an on or off state. It's always there, guiding us forward. What we're trying to do on the path of yoga is to really walk in the light of our highest wisdom so we can walk directly towards our highest purpose. And the reason why we want to do that is not because that's good and everything else is bad. It's deeply fulfilling, and that might be an understatement. It's so completely fulfilling that we feel fully nourished, fully guided, fully protected. That is prajna. And this commentary here talks about the numerous references to prajna that follow in chapters 2, 3, and 4 of Yoga Sutra. It's a very, very important concept. To call it a concept again is trivializing it, just like calling buddhi a concept. We have to give these important realities a word, You know, so we call our soul the soul, even though we know that, wow, it really feels like it's trivializing it. Even when we refer to ourselves by whatever name we have, but we know that I'm more than just that name. I'm a whole world of experience. Just like that, the word buddhi and pragya are meant to help us have something to relate to, something much, much deeper. But the only way to really know it is by experiencing it. That experience comes from all the stages of samapatti, absorption, and samadhi, which lead us to pragya. I made a note as well that we can define pragya in this way, that pragya is the pure light of consciousness, perhaps with a capital C. Pragya is the pure light of consciousness which we experience through Vishoka and Jyotishmati. The final two stages of lower samadhi were Ananda Anugata Samadhi and Asmita Anugata Samadhi. Samadhi accompanied by joy and pure awareness. That's exactly what Vishoka and Jyotishmati are. We reach pragya. We reach that furthest frontier of lower samadhi, furthest frontier of what our self-effort, where our self-effort can lead us, furthest frontier of a highly refined objective experience of ourself, where we still see ourself as distinct from consciousness. We reach that, and that frontier is called pragya. It's the radiance and brilliance of consciousness itself. We reach there through this experience of Vishoka and Jyotishmati. Sutra 148 goes into some specifics about pragya. And what it specifically talks about is sevenfold freedom, seven unique expressions of pragya, this intuitive wisdom. The first four are called karya vimukti. And if the Sanskrit is too much, leave it aside and we'll just look at what the word means. These first four layers of our freedom are freedom from our karmic identity. Freedom from our identity, more simply put. We no longer define ourselves by how the external world sees us and what we see in the external world. And we no longer need to define ourselves by our past, by all of those seeds of identity within our karma, our samskaras. We gain freedom from all of those self-imposed identities. And it makes sense because pragya is the light of our inner wisdom, which is the pure brilliance of consciousness. Consciousness doesn't need anything outside to define it. It is what gives meaning to everything else on the outside. So we're beginning to be free of our self-imposed limitations, our karmic identities, because we're beginning to see ourselves in the light of pure consciousness. Those are the first four levels of freedom that come from pragya. The last three are freedom from three levels of the mind itself. Three levels of realization that free us from the fundamental forces of the mind, citta vimukti. What this really means is that we understand ourselves and understand our mind at every level, fully. What does that mean? The essence of the mind is buddhi, that pure capacity for perception, pure awareness. For a long time, we've understood our mind to be what we experience and how we experience. So we looked at that anatomy of the mind, where we saw that the most external part of the mind is our senses. What we see, smell, taste, touch, and hear. For a long time, that's what we think our mind is, the functional capacity of our senses. Then we begin realizing that our mind is more than our functional capacity of the senses. Something integrates all of that together. Our conscious mind, that manas, that coordinating element that brings all of this information to a point of focus and turns it into knowledge. And that feels very real to us. Then we go a little bit deeper and we realize that all of that information which is turned into knowledge by our mind is really only knowledge because we give it value, because we're able to identify with it, because we're able to make it ours. That's what we called our ahamkara, our capacity for identification, or our ego, which is even more subtle. Now we're seeing that there's something, and that's often where our journey ends, because it's literally our identity. It's that which makes our identity and is our identity. Meditation allows us to begin seeing that there's a deeper power which allows our identity to be, which allows us to have an objective awareness where we create all these identities. That's what buddhi is all about. Buddhi is that inner radiance that flows directly from pure consciousness, which gives power to our identity. And that's the irony, that the ego, the asmita, the ahamkara, is using the power of the buddhi, and it's doing it so well that it thinks that it's the source of the power itself and not a capacity. That's the whole trick here. So beginning to realize that there's a finer dimension of ourself beyond our identity, which allows our identity to become real, is a furthest frontier of freedom. That freedom comes when we experience our prajna, which is this discerning wisdom of our buddhi, the essence of our buddhi. That's why prajna grants us complete freedom. So it's a very beautiful expression of why it's so important to find our inner essence, why the experience of buddhi is the goal of meditation. And all of these successive stages of samapatti, absorption, in more increasingly subtle objects, which leads to an increasingly subtle state of experience, which we call these various states of lower samadhi. Why that's so important? As we grow in samadhi, we become more and more essential in our awareness. We're closer to our buddhi. The closer we are to our buddhi, the more we experience our prajna, this intuitive wisdom, our brilliance that arises from within. We brighten our intuition, our prajna, through meditation and achieve the goal of yoga. So prajna really is that gateway to our freedom, to our fulfillment. And there's so much more that we could talk about prajna, and that's really a consistent theme through many, many more parts of Yoga Sutra. But the one key thing to keep in mind is that prajna really is that these multiple layers of prajna are the final frontier between whatever we're calling lower samadhi, where we're still a unique, discrete being, there's an objective awareness, and whatever lies beyond. Sutra 149. Because intuitive wisdom contains the meaning or essence of the unique, in quotations, it has a different scope than the knowledge gained from scriptures and from inference. This is helping us understand more about the nature of prajna. Prajna, by very definition, means our deepest intuitive wisdom. And this Sutra 149 is reinforcing a very important understanding that this intuitive wisdom is unlike anything that we gain from the world. It comes from within, and not only does it come from within, it comes directly from the source of our awareness itself. It comes directly from buddhi, from consciousness. All of the awareness that we receive from the outside first begins as information. Then it becomes knowledge once it's integrated into a coherent form. And then it becomes wisdom when we make it our own and put it in light of our identity. But it's wisdom which is grounded upon understanding that is coming from either outside of us or is coming from our current identity inside of us. This wisdom doesn't have the capacity to bring us complete freedom because in part it's similar to our current identity and in part it might be helping us to transform that identity. It's like we're using one thorn to take out another thorn, something which is part of our identity, but we're simply trying to take the best of our identity now and weave it together so we grow more and more essential, more and more free. Ultimately, we're trying to find the very source of fulfillment, not particular experiences of fulfillment. All of those different identities are different ways that we've experienced ourselves, which are wonderful. But we're trying to see the difference between an experience of fulfillment and the very force of fulfillment. That's the difference between intuitive wisdom that comes from the deepest part of our being, our prajna, and any wisdom that comes from the world or that comes from our inner world, our identity. It's not that this other wisdom is bad. We need to make sure we're asking for the right thing from the right place. It is fulfilling, but only in part. And it helps us to understand the nature of fulfillment itself. And that's the whole trick here. How long does it take for us to see the big picture? As long as it takes. Never too soon, never too late. We keep experiencing. And all we ask ourselves is that we're looking for more and more richness out of these experiences, more and more essence. And we weave that together. That's wisdom that comes from the world. The world is not just outside of us, but our inner world. We're asking for intuitive wisdom that comes from our deepest source. That's what prajna is all about, and that's what the sutra is telling us. That at the end of the day, we're looking to discover who we are, not in light of the world or in light of whatever we already know ourselves to be, but in light of our inner essence. We're trying to experience fulfillment directly and not through more experiences. It goes back to the idea of identity, which we talked about in Sabija, that we're looking for the very source of identity, the power that makes identity real, rather than another identity. Even if those other identities are extremely refined, an identity that revolves around pure luminosity, pure joy, and pure awareness is extraordinary. One that we probably feel very happy about having as our primary identity right now. But what it tells us is that once we reach that state, and that state becomes very, very condensed, very real, we begin to see that there is something even more. The veil is very thin, the veil that separates our current identity from our deepest source. But there is still something there which is left. That's why we're almost at the very end, because we're almost there. And it all comes from prajna. Samskaras born of intuitive wisdom, prajna, cancel all other samskaras. It's exactly where we left off. That all of our identities are transformed in the light of our highest wisdom, in the light of prajna. So we used the word samskara earlier to mean those subtle impressions in the mind. We talked about the idea that samskara is essentially the same as karma or karmic identity. All those seeds that we contain within, all of those different ways that we define ourselves to be. And we talked about yoga as the path of reweaving the fabric of our karma. Not that we're at battle with our karmic identity, but rather we're trying to find the best in ourselves and use that as a stepping stone to grow more fulfilled. We transform our samskaras so that we can find something more essential. And we keep doing that through our abhyasa and vairagya. And ultimately, what we're left with is a very powerful samskara, a very powerful identity of being a meditator. A very powerful samskara of that process of meditation and that object of meditation, even if it's a very, very subtle, highly refined object. We're left with that as a very powerful identity. The beauty is there's a lot of wisdom that that kind of identity already has latent within it. It's an identity which is very much flowing from a deeper source rather than something which is external. Another way of putting it is that that kind of samskara, the samskara of abhyasa, has a very, very small dimension of any form of bondage or limitation and a very high dimension of that self-revealing, self-liberating quality. What this is telling us here is that we gain the deepest state of fulfillment and freedom through our prajna, that we don't create that for ourselves. It's not another achievement. It's not another identity. It's by allowing ourselves to be held and guided by the very force which breathes life into our identity. We talked about this much earlier on when we looked at abhyasa and vairagya. We talked about abhyasa being that which is ours to do, cultivating the experience of a peaceful flow of awareness and making it more and more real, training our mind to flow inward peacefully and creating a really powerful groove in our mind, a really powerful way that our mind identifies itself and expresses itself. And we do that, and we do it really well with tremendous intensity, this yatana, this investing the best of ourself with full energy and full enthusiasm to experience this peaceful flow of awareness. But ultimately, it's not our practice, it's not our abhyasa which brings us to the final goal, but rather our vairagya, para vairagya, the capacity to be truly held by our inner experience. Vairagya normally is defined as non-attachment. What we're letting go of here is our identity of being the one who's meditating, the doer. But really what we're doing is we're releasing that identity because we've reached a state where we're fully comfortable, trustfully surrendering our identity and being embraced by a higher reality, being fully embraced. It's not a state of defeat or surrender. It's not a state of growing smaller and losing our identity. It's a state of achieving the greatest possible identity, which is pure awareness. We have to allow ourselves to be fully embraced, and we only do that once we know that we have completed our work, once we're comfortable and fully prepared to see ourselves as something other than an identity. It's very, very subtle. That experience, that capacity, comes from our intuitive wisdom, our prajna, a unique samskara that allows us to go beyond. What happens then? Sutra 151, the final sutra of Samadhipada. Upon cancellation of even that, meaning that samskara, everything else is canceled. This is Nirbija Samadhi. Nirbija Samadhi is exactly the same as Asamprangyata Samadhi from 118. Here again, we're defining it in the context of our identity, Nirbija Samadhi, where we are completely free from all identities. It's that state of realization where awareness is completely identified with pure consciousness. No other identity. The commentary on Sutra 151 is quite long, especially in comparison to the commentary on many of the sutras which preceded it. And it's because we need to look at this peak experience in a systematic way. In many regards, this is the culmination of human achievement, this Nirbija Samadhi. And it's that experience which allows a human being to be complete, to find whatever it is within, which is our inner spark of divinity. It's very, very meaningful that we're talking about Nirbija Samadhi. It takes us back to identity. Page 253 really does a beautiful job of explaining this in a succinct way about what Nirbija Samadhi is all about. In Nirbija Samadhi, metaphorically, the mind stands still next to pure consciousness. In this state, the mind is naturally motivated to flow inward toward the center of consciousness. It flows outward only when motivated or propelled by divine will. When it interacts with the objective world, it is untouched by what it touches. Actions performed by this kind of mind do not engender samskaras. What is more, the mind is now free from even meditative samskaras. We don't disappear when we reach Nirbija Samadhi. Our need to identify ourselves with anything of the world disappears. We're complete. We're completely fulfilled. This is a very unique realization that makes yoga stand out among many other philosophies, that freedom is not defined by lack of bondage. Freedom is defined by fulfillment. We are complete. That awareness of completion allows us to be here fully. Doesn't mean we disappear or need or have no more involvement or interest. We can be fully engaged, but not need to have that engagement have any bearing on our inner experience of who we are. We're no longer defined by the world outside or the world inside. So it goes back to samskaras. The commentary goes on to say more. Samskaras are like seeds germinating in the mind. They cause the mind to think, imagine, desire, and crave. Spiritually oriented samskaras neutralize our worldly samskaras and thereby induce a significant degree of freedom, meaning we're more fulfilled. Spiritually oriented samskaras are ones where we begin to see a deeper potential for fulfillment. It's not about how many more material objects or material experiences or external identities I can collect, but am I deriving a deeper essence from those experiences? That's the way to interpret spiritually oriented samskaras. That might take the form of something which we call spiritual. It also might take the form of being in the world with purpose. That's a spiritually oriented samskara. Goes on to comment that, but from a higher perspective, even these spiritually oriented samskaras are a source of a subtle but potent form of spiritual bondage. We only gain freedom from them by cultivating a very profound state of vairagya, a mind free from the coloring of potent samskaras. So we need to continue working with this vairagya in addition to our practice of meditation, our abhyasa, that we're we've trained our mind to flow peacefully, but we continue to inspire ourselves to see ourselves in a new light, to transform how we see ourselves. The practice of process-driven meditation can purify the mind and lead it all the way to the outer frontier of lower samadhi, meaning it can help us reach the experience of pragya. Thereafter, the journey is dependent on the highest level of vairagya, called paravairagya, which takes us back to Sutra 116. This level of vairagya prepares the ground for the grace of the Supreme Being, higher reality, Ishvara. It prepares the ground for grace to lift our consciousness to a realm unreachable through self-effort. So Nirbija Samadhi is the meeting point between self-effort and divine grace. Trustfully surrendering ourself means allowing ourself to be fully embraced by divine grace and recognizing that even our self-effort itself is an expression of grace. We begin to ask ourselves, what is the source of this power that I'm experiencing within? What is the source of my pragya, this almost limitless radiance of intuitive wisdom? Where does it come from? And allowing ourselves to be fully embraced by that reality. This takes us back to Sutra 123. Self-effort, by definition, means we are cognizant of our action, in this case, meditation. That's what we talked about in lower samadhi. There's an experience of ourself as the meditator, the process of meditation, and the object of meditation. All of that is what we're calling self-effort. I'm still the doer, even though it's a highly refined state of action. When we trustfully surrender to the guiding light of pragya, which is the light of higher divinity itself, the light of Ishvara, pure consciousness, we are spontaneously transported to seedless samadhi, Nirbija samadhi. This is the highest goal of yoga. We reach Nirbija samadhi through our own grace, when we allow ourself to experience that self-effort is flows from grace, and that grace is that culmination. This commentary is very rich, and it goes on. And the last comment I'll make about Nirbija Samadhi is that Nirbija Samadhi is not a thought or an experience. So it's beyond. That's why it's the final frontier, beyond pragya. It's the experience of buddhi being fully resting fully in an awareness of pure consciousness. So it's a state of realization of consciousness by consciousness. It's beyond our world of experience. We have to give a word to it, even though it's really beyond all description. The word that we're choosing to give to it is Nirbija Samadhi, or Asampragyata Samadhi from 118. What I find most fascinating is that the ancient commentary of Vyasa and this commentary stops in essentially where I stopped reading to you, you know, around that point, stops talking about Nirbija Samadhi and talks about two unique transitional states between lower samadhi and higher samadhi and what that kind of experience gives you. And the two different states are Dharma Megha Samadhi, and Madhumati Bhumi. So we'll talk about Dharma Megha Samadhi. Dharma Megha Samadhi is a unique state of a profoundly rich awareness of pragya, of the state of intuitive wisdom. And go back to the idea of the mind being like a pure crystal. When our mind is highly refined, when we're experiencing buddhi, it reflects whatever is closest to it, or whatever is in its view. So in this state of the higher states of lower samadhi, buddhi is highly refined. And what's right next to it is an experience of pure luminosity and freedom from pain, pure joy. That engenders a very amazing experience, which can be called Dharma Megha Samadhi. Samadhi, which is a cloud of virtue, a cloud of dharma. And the commentary makes an amazing statement that both our worldly activities and our spiritual practices create illuminating samskaras. Everything that we're engaged in is an expression of our dharma. And that the joy and luminosity that reigns from this experience is an experience of dharma megha samadhi. It's like our dharma, our experience of purpose, condenses as a cloud over our life and rains joy and pure awareness, pure luminosity into our life. Our experience of ourself and of the world becomes an experience of pure purpose, dharma. It's amazing that that is the transitional point between lower samadhi and higher samadhi, because it means that discovering our purpose, where that purpose flows from our deepest self, a higher purpose, is the gateway to experiencing pure being. It's not looking for the escape hatch or that ejector seat in a plane that's about to crash where we get out of this thing quickly, but learning to really be here and be here completely, with full engagement, without needing it to be a source of more and more identity. Page 260. We find our life's purpose in dharma megha samadhi. We are fulfilled. At the peak of the experience of dharma megha samadhi, we spontaneously slip into the highest state of samadhi, nirbija samadhi. For even the subtlest cause, the desire to live as an isolated being has dissolved. In nirbija samadhi, we are immersed in the experience of being held in her immutable essential being, swarupa pratishtha, her being pure consciousness. In nirbija samadhi, we attain complete freedom from the binding forces of our ordinary mind. This is what yogis call immortality. And this is the highest goal of all of yoga, samadhi. Thank you very much. We've covered Yoga Sutra from 1 to 51. And I look forward to studying the second pada, sadhana pada, with you very soon. Thank you, and God bless you.